Homestyle Green, episode 255, from biophilic design to passive house. G'day and welcome back to another episode of Homestyle Green. This is the podcast dedicated to inspiring people to make a better place to live. Justine Money describes herself as a British Maori Australian architect. She has a very strong sense of culture and she also is very sensitive towards environmental design. She's explored biophilic design and more recently passive house. She's become a certified passive house designer. And I caught up with Justine a little while ago now to talk about her journey. But before we get into today's interview, I just want to do a shout out to the great team at Enveloped. Because if you're looking at doing a high performance project, whether it's a new build or a renovation, and you're anywhere in New Zealand, then you definitely want to be talking to Enveloped. They can help you out with all things insulation, air tightness, ventilation, basically all the things you need to make your home work really, really well. And the great thing is they not only supply high-performance products, but they can install them as well. And this is really important because it's all well and good having great products, but they won't work well if you don't install them properly. So give them a call, check them out. You can find their website, enveloped.co.nz. That's envelop with a D, enveloped.co.nz. Now let's get into this week's interview with Justine Money. I started out by asking Justine how she got into design in the first place.
Well, it goes back to, I used to have an upholstery business with my husband. This is way back, and had two young children, and I was dissatisfied with where I was at, and then embarked on an architecture degree. So I was a mature student of architecture, and I was very lucky to, before I even started the architecture degree, to work with Eels Trelease in Newtown, which was a fabulous experience because it's a high design end architecture firm. Not sure if you're familiar with. And then postgraduate, I was back there and gained some great knowledge. And then I think it was probably about 7 years postgraduate, I actually started my own business because that's what I was familiar with. So where I'm at.
Was that quite daunting? I mean, architecture is not a small thing to go and study. Was that quite daunting?
It was. It was. I'd messed around with lots. I shouldn't say messed around. I used to teach batik, all the creative side stuff, you know. So I was really doing a lot of the creative stuff. But I didn't see a career path with it. So I was looking for something else that would suit that creative part of me. And so when I did the drafting course in TAFE, and that was a good stepping stone for me. And then through that, I got credits into the university degree. And when I walked it, first day walking into the university, I looked around and I thought, I'm a suburban housewife. What am I doing?
Those 18-year-olds.
Yes, I was mother hen. I was mother hen. And then I was dealing with children at school as well. So it was a very challenging time, but it was well worth it. It really got me secured in a direction that sought my purpose in life. And sits well.
Yeah, because you went from, like I say, running your own business to being a student again. It's a big big leap.
Yes, it was, and there were many challenges along the way, and it was really difficult coming from the drafting course and then into the architecture degree, where you're coming from the constraints of drafting and the building codes and then you're coming into the architecture design course and they're like, no, you do whatever you like, you're free, and, you know, and having to let go of the constraints, open up to the creative path again, but then come back to the constraints post-grad, back into the office. That was quite challenging.
I think that's one of the fascinating things about architecture is that it deals with both of those sides. You've got the creative flair, but there are hard and fast rules, not just of physics and science, but also of building codes and regulations and boundaries and things like that. So yeah. You have to be a pretty special person, I think, to be a good architect.
Yeah, and I love it. I absolutely love those constraints that are put on the design process. As much as it's costly on time, but it's that thing that really keeps me going, is to know that I've got those constraints and to push forward, and then to add the layer of, I wouldn't call it a constraint, but for the layer of sustainability, material selection, and then onto passive house, it give me more challenges, and I enjoy it more. And I'm lucky now, my children are all adults, so it's my time now to really push my beliefs in and my place in architecture.
And speaking of place, you have an accent.
Yes.
You're in Australia, but tell us about Noho.
Because Noho is
Noho.
Yeah. My father's Maori. I was raised in the UK, in the south of the UK. My father was he came over as a speedway rider to the UK. So
I was always under,
yes. So I was one of those little children running around the speedway tracks and lost in the crowds of life when I was a child, which just made me quite a internal kind of person now, because all those crowds as a child was awful. I didn't enjoy it at all. But anyway,
you rebelled against the crowds.
Yes, it was awful. And then I came to Australia at 21, thought I'd try something different. And then it was coming to Australia that I really got more into connection with my Maori side and started the language and had that more connection, because in England I never met another Maori person. So I was very detached from my culture. So Australia brought that back to me, and now I spend a lot of time in New Zealand as well, looking at my learning more about my whakapapa, and I'm actually learning the language again at the moment.
Awesome.
And I currently, last year we held a Korowai Wānanga in our studio, which was a very beautiful workshop with a lot of beautiful women. We all sat and we weaved the korowai, and we spent 3 weekends together. Well, we were told by Fire Ray that it would only be 3 weekends of our life. How hard is it? Well, she didn't talk about the 80 hours in between that we were doing, working on our korowai, but it was a most refreshing and deeply connecting experience for me. And that's what kind of led me on to do workshops in our office, because it was like, well, if I can gather a wānanga here, there's no reason why I can't gather groups of individuals and do some chats about architecture and the process.
Is that starting to influence? I mean, obviously it has influence, but just in your journey and your search for that belonging and the culture and coming back to your your whakapapa, how does that come through in your work now?
I think I've had this question before, and it's really interesting, and I always have difficulty explaining it, but it's, I think it's more about coming home to myself, and by feeling that more connection, and not just purely an identity, but a deeper connection, understanding where I come from and then who I stand for, kind of helps me make those clearer decisions and stand strong in what I believe in and keep pursuing that. It's more of an inner strength that comes through that. Look, I can't say that I look at traditional Māori structures and think, oh, I'm going to reproduce that. It's more the sense of place, a sense of home, and more of the psychology of space and how we habitate our dwellings.
Are there more, have you found more of a Māori community now in Australia?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. We also, my partner is also Māori, and she's from Nelson. So we go back to Nelson and the Marlborough Sands a lot, and that's where we're planning to kind of set up a little place there on the sands at some point.
Yeah. Greenery features a lot for you, and gardens and nature. So you definitely try and incorporate nature into your buildings, whether it's inside or on the roof. Tell me about your attraction to green roofs.
Well, it's more attraction to nature. It's more that connection with nature and how it, the well-being of living in a space where you've got that constant glimpse or connection with the outside, and you know, the same as the kind of patterns of biophilic design. I'm always trying to, at least from little point, where even if it's a little slot in a bathroom window that you can see out to, whether it be a green roof that your bedroom completely opens out to, I think that connection with nature is based on the biophilic design patterns, and I try and it's a natural instinct to want to have that connection. And I've not found a client that doesn't want that yet. So it's all about well-being and that connection, and it's how I keep developing different options of how best to do that, how to change that threshold of the inside and out, so that there's this transition that softly connects to nature.
For those that haven't come across that before, what is biophilic design?
Oh, biophilic design is a big question. There's 16 patterns that are based on biophilic design, and it's around it's a lot of research has done around the health and well-being of these elements that are part of biophilic design that enhance the way we live. So there's items like water, light, connection with nature, connection with overseeing a larger area in the distance, but also being able to retreat back into the building. It's a lot of psychological elements that enhance the way we live.
I obviously tell us a little bit about Pittwater Road, Manly. It features quite a lot on your website, and it's some stunning images there. I assume that's one of your headline projects.
Yes. I was working with a friend at Eels Trelease, and she moved back to London, and then she had a friend who wanted to have an addition put on his home, and this was the owner of Pittwater Road. And what was wonderful about this project was the fact how we worked together. He was really interesting, young, creative entrepreneur. So from having a little federation semi, we took that and we chopped off the rear 1980s addition, and then we built a two-story dwelling on the back, and it's a teeny weeny less than 250 square meter site. And we played with the light, we did passive solar design. We looked at lots of different elements that would work, paring back the building to expose the natural brick tones that we used. Mm-hmm. We recycled all the bricks from the site, and we used those for the rear wall and all the paths and the retaining walls in the garden. And then we pared back the walls to expose the brick behind the splashback.
Yeah.
So there was lots and lots of multiple layers of things that we did together on this. I brought in the green roofs. I because it was such a small site, we were ended up with this little square patch of grass at the back. So I wanted to give some three layers of landscape for him. So we had the ground floor layer of landscape. Mm-hmm. Then we had the carport. We layered that with a green roof. And then we had another awning that came out from the bedroom, and we put a green roof on there. So we created three levels of landscape, even though So we tripled the landscape, even though you couldn't have fitted that landscape on the site. We made that landscape vertically instead. So
it's incredible. One of the things. Well, there's lots to like about it, and I'll put the links up. But one of the things I really like is that there's an image there, which I assume is one of your early concept designs or a render,
mm-hmm.
and it almost looks identical to the finished photos.
Oh, we've got to thank Jack for that. Oh, he was an English lad in my office at the time. He did that. At one point, I did see the Prime Minister of the UK up there on the balcony when he first did the render. I was going, Jack, I know who that is. You can take him off. The beautiful landscape that he put in that render was just made it look so appealing. It did come up just as he rendered. It was quite
amazing. And I think more to the point, just how you visualised it and how you've put the elements together, including that roof and that transition from the bedroom almost seamlessly through to that top layer is quite something. Tell me about indoor-outdoor flow. What are your thoughts on the vision, the dream of indoor-outdoor flow and the reality of it?
Yes. Well,
because you've got how many panels is it? That pretty much that whole wall opens up, right?
Yeah, that whole wall for that bedroom completely opens up. And that's all, we can manage that because we always make that transition space between the line of indoor and out, but there's still a covered space outside. Yeah. So I don't necessarily believe you have to completely open everything up because sometimes it can be too relentless, you know. But these clients did want to, even though there's a block of apartments looking into them, they were happy to open up. And they even wanted the glass balustrade, where I was happy to put a solid balustrade there of timber so that there was some level of privacy. But, you know, they were keen to completely open up. I thought, well, okay, you can do that if you're happy to live like that. And so which what happens is, especially with this being such a small site, the issue was making every space that we had internally feel larger. So there was that level of feel of space, the level of connection to the landscape, nature, and then the level of being able to see beyond that. So But then there's some spaces where I choose not to open up. I think it's not right for the site, right for the internal room. It's not always about completely opening up, but where you can, I do as much as I can to it to get that natural light in.
Thinking back through your journey, you talked a little bit about your ancestral heritage. Do you think growing up in the UK has influenced your work at all?
I haven't actually considered that. I think who we are today is a compound of every event we've had in our life. So my childhood in the UK, and I was raised in a very industrial part of Birmingham, and the bricks, the chimneys, there's always that part of imprint on memory of space. And I think then moving to Australia was quite a shock because I'd never felt so cold in the springtime because our houses here aren't very sealed. And it was a shock coming from England because I actually felt cold indoors, which I'd never felt in the UK. So I think it definitely would impact the way I'm not sure if it imparts in my architecture, but it definitely has an impact. I think there's I can't really pinpoint it, sorry. It's something that we're always going to import part something on that site depending on where you've been and where you are at that time in your life.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking 200 square metre section is tiny for Australia, but would not be uncommon for Birmingham or Manchester, the middle of London.
Oh, no, it's a mansion.
In small areas. Yeah.
we now have a four-bedroom house there. On that tiny site, and the front two bedrooms are sectioned off with a bathroom for the client Airbnb's the front of the building. So that's like it's It's a very large house in British terms, for sure.
And so many people have said the similar sentiment that they come to Australia or New Zealand and they've never been colder, despite coming from a harsher climate.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is ridiculous.
I know. And then when I go back to the UK, I'm like opening all the windows because I'm like, oh God, it's fresh air. Where's the fresh air? So it's different. Look, I always squeeze as much as I can into a build because I see some space as wasted space, and I don't see a point in paying for that. And sustainably, I don't think it's worthwhile.
When did you first come across Passive House?
University.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I can't remember the point of it, the point in time, but I do remember it being talked about. And then I remember just putting it aside going, oh, well, that's not going to work for Australia. That's where I was at then. And then from that time, I had that meeting with a builder last year who talked about it again. And then he got me excited, and I thought, this is where I used to find sustainable buildings and environmentally sustainable construction. I found it wasn't measured. We couldn't quantify what we were really doing. And as much as I get feedback from clients who say, oh, we've not had to have any heating this winter. It's been fabulous because of the thermal mass. I still felt like I was jiggling a load of items that just weren't accountable. It was just choices that I made. And once I found Passive House and I delved deeper into it, I thought it was a no-brainer. And so I applied for the scholarship for the last year's Passive House Designer course.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I was luckily enough successful with the scholarship, and I think I commenced 2 weeks later, and it was probably one of the greater experiences of my life, those 2 weeks with Daniel. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. What made it so amazing? I mean, you partly knew what you were getting into.
Yeah, I knew what I was getting into. I was it's quite fearful. It was one of those times in your life where you look at it and you're amazed at what you can. Firstly, you get amazed at what you can achieve in those 2 weeks, the amount of content. Secondly, we had a leader there with Daniel teaching, who not only was committed to what he was teaching, he was committed at a lifelong purpose level. And from that space, he gave us the opportunity to make that our purpose too. So there was this kind of heightened experience, not only through the learning curve, which was massive. It was about the connection with a deeper purpose that we all can do this and we can all make the difference. And that's where it was a two-layer thing, that experience.
And where is that purpose now? Do you have trouble putting that into practice in a practical terms, you know, getting clients that will also go on that journey with you?
Yes, yeah. So when I first did the course, I was overwhelmed first. It took a while to assimilate that process I'd just been through. So I was in a bit of Passive House shock, and I was like, how on earth am I going to do this? And I was really fearful because it was so much information, and the natural fears of, oh, I'm going to get it wrong. How am I going to do it? How am I going to market this? So I've let it sit for the past few months, and now I've hit a point of like, okay, I've been talking to another architect. We both did the course together, and now we're looking at marketing strategies together on how we're going to get it out there, because I need to make a plan. I know I've decided I'm making a plan now that at least 50% of projects moving forward to be Passive House. But yeah, it took a while for me to come out the other side to pull myself back together. It was quite overwhelming. Yeah. But that's because I really appreciate that work and I want to do it right.
It sounds like being genuine and doing things right, being very authentic, are very important to you?
Yes. I've had a bit of trouble with this in my architecture career. Not so much that it took me a while to find my place. Mm-hmm. I found the architecture world very different to a world that I was used to. I found it very more academic than realistic. And it's taken me a while to grow into who I am as an architect. And I've just found that the more I can be true to me, the more authenticity that I can have with clients and with my purpose, I think it's a no-brainer. Can't go wrong.
Mm. You mentioned about marketing and that you want to sort of attract those sorts of clients. How have you gone about that now? Because that's not an easy thing to have a connection or decide not to have a connection with clients at that level. How do you go about finding out whether the clients are right for you or attracting the right ones?
Well, that's a million-dollar question, isn't it? Look, the way I'm approaching at the moment is to, which I've started my content, is about small snippets of education to put myself out there as a passive house designer. The other way that I'm approaching it is that with every new client that I do get is that I look at the project and then I discuss with them the components of passive house and how they could benefit from this process. So it's in one part I'm heading out as a passive house designer and this is what I do and this is some information I'm giving you and being part of all the groups and in that respect. But the other layer is the fact of it's like an add-on to the initial client brief with my traditional architect clients per se. So mm-hmm. it's something that I'm adding on and if it's something that I feel is quite doable in their brief, I'm really pushing on it.
Yeah, yeah. Where would you like to see things move? I mean, it's an exciting time, I think, in not just passive house, but awareness of things like biophilia and green spaces and better envelopes in general. Mm-hmm. Where would you like to see things go in the next 5 to 10 years in Australia?
I just want this momentum to continue with the passive house. We've already started. There's been new legislation. I haven't really looked into it, so I can't really indicate exactly what that is. But things are moving, but I want it to be at a steeper rate. I think we need to move faster now. And a lot of architects are out there really trying to make the difference. But I just want it to move quicker. I think we're just running out of time. I think we just got to, and there's too many, every minute we're thinking about this, there's another house that's not going to be suitable to be living in the next 10 years. So it's for me, it's all about speed now and to keep that momentum going through. But to actually see what I for the future, it's just every new house to be at least sustainable and constructed properly. Well, probably can be, we can at least start with that. And a lot more of like aged care and schools. I'd love to see all of our schools be passive house, you know, have that healthy environment as much as possible.
Yes, indeed. I think that's a great vision. And I think the more people that are doing work like you are and putting projects out for others to see and also to feel as well, I think that's part of the key is people coming in and actually experiencing what warm, dry, comfortable actually feels like throughout the year is going to be a huge step forward.
Yeah.
Pleasure talking with you, Justine. I really enjoyed looking through your website. Where can people find you and see some of your work?
My website, noho.com.au. And I'm on Facebook, LinkedIn, Justine Money. That's where you can find me.
I'll be sure to link those up, and all the best with thinking about that marketing, the next step, and attracting more customers. I have a feeling you won't have too much trouble attracting the people that you want to attract.
Oh, thank you, Matthew. I appreciate that.
And that was Justine Money, who has her practice Know Her Architecture. She's based in Greater Sydney area in New South Wales, Australia. I really love hearing about her journey, talking about discovering design, thinking about biophilic design, and just how buildings can be more environmentally sensitive, and also exploring her cultural heritage and bringing that into her work as well. And then, of course, more recently, discovering Passive House and incorporating that science into what she does. That just about does it for this week on the Homestyle Green podcast. As I mentioned, definitely check out the Passive House podcast as well. If you haven't subscribed to that, head on over to Passive House Accelerator. And while you're there, check out all the great resources and weekly activities that are truly global, and have a great network of people that you can connect with there. That's the passivehouseaccelerator.com. Thanks very much for listening. Apologies for a bit of a delay in getting this episode out. I'm actually really enjoying being back in Adelaide this week. So things got a little bit delayed. I'm very, very fortunate to be able to make my own way here to see my family and where I grew up. And then heading back to Auckland tomorrow as I'm recording this. Thank you again. I really appreciate your comments, thoughts, feedback. Look forward to bringing you another episode of the podcast next week. Now go make a better place to live.